If anyone doesn't like the topic of today's class, there's a... we'll see in a second. One of the women in the room took... last week she made a request, and we were fulfilling her request. It could be halfway through the class she'll say, you know what, it's not so interesting. This was a mistake, I'd rather do something else. But last week when we started talking about things which are... with the idea of sitting on the table... I don't know why, but for some reason she had some kind of an association with things which are dangerous, spiritually. And she mentioned that she had heard, but she's not sure where, that it's dangerous to eat garlic which has been left out overnight. Unpeeled garlic which has been left out. Peeled garlic or onions, by the way, which have been left out overnight. Now, is there anybody in this room that have never heard of such... this is all I need to know right now. Is there anybody here who's never heard of such a thing? Okay, that makes everybody. That's
no,
very good.
I did.
Okay, one second. I asked who never heard about it. Now you'll get to speak. Is there anybody here who has heard of this? Is there anybody here who's actually practiced this? Is there anybody here, and this will already be no... is anybody here who remembers in their mother or grandmother's kitchen that they were concerned about this? And being that you've never heard of it, so it's quite unlikely that you remember your mother or grandmother's being concerned. Now, here's just a point of procedure, and then you'll get to speak and say whatever you want. No, not yet.
Those weird things on the internet when you go on your homepage.
Yes.
And you have nothing else to do, this is an article.
You found an article on the internet. Okay. Now you know why the internet is considered dangerous and you should stay away from it. Now, here is an observation before we look at any other source today. We have over here more than a dozen Jewish women who probably had a dozen Jewish mothers and two dozen Jewish grandmothers, correct? Now, what?
More or less.
Now, if dozens of Jewish women, and this is just, this is non-scientific, this example, so we can't publish the results, but if dozens of Jewish women spanning three generations, really there's no memory of any such law, then we have to question if this is in fact really a law. Okay? I also decided to look on the internet just to see if there's anything out there, and I found one webpage which is called amotherinisrael.com. And she has over here an article from 2 years ago, "On the Day is Short and the Work is Great, Efficient Shabbat Preparations." I will not go through with you all the Shabbat preparations, but...
been there, done that.
But, number 9 out of 10, she writes, "Most kitchen work involves preparing vegetables, I guess. So I peel, wash, and chop the day before. If my kids are out to help, even better. Keep in mind the little-known halacha..." And she has an asterisk over here to the bottom. The asterisk takes us to a point at the bottom. She writes, "Little known halakha, a point of Jewish law that I did not know when I got married," which means she also never heard of this law. And then she comes and she continues and she says that peeled onions and garlic should not be left overnight. So there is this little known halakha.
Should not be left overnight or not should be left out?
Should not be left overnight. Once you peel them, you cannot... once you peel them, then that's it. One second. I later on looked, because people never write who they really are on these things. So I later on looked who it was. Yes, of course you know who she is, because you're from the same... right. Okay. Right. Right, so then afterwards I looked who it was, and I realized I know who she is. And not only that, she's come to my class a number of times. So, and then on the bottom of this webpage, there were 27 comments as of this morning. And some of them were asking about this halakha, and where did you find this? Oh, some Kolo guy told this to me. So this was based upon very authentic and authoritative sources. So now, we will learn about this law today. What I will say before we start, if there was somebody who this really was their custom, then I don't think I would have told anybody not to keep the custom, although it depends why they started to keep the custom, as with many customs. If you started to think it because you thought that this was the law, so then we'll hold on to it. Being that none of you have kept this custom, although some of you have heard of it. So let's take a look and just simply see where it comes from. Yeah. Okay. I also looked at a couple other places. I looked at the OU site, which was fascinating, which basically came to a lenient, there was a question about it, it came to a lenient decision, even though it said something which I tend to disagree with. It said the overwhelming number of poskim are stringent on this, which I just don't think is the case. But let's now try to figure out where this law came from. Look at source number one. Excuse me? Correct. And how can this have a hechsher? So let's look at the sources, and then we'll see, and then we'll understand the topic. Okay, but we don't know yet. Let's read the sources, and then we could decide what's good, what's not good, and what's the problem, what may not be a problem. Amar Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Now you've heard of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and he is sometimes called Rav Shimon bar Yochai. They both mean son. One's Aramaic, one's Hebrew. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, this is Gemara in Masechet Nida, and it comes and has this side discussion about things which are dangerous. Amar Shimon bar Yochai, Chamisha dvarim hein, she'osin otam mitchayev b'nafsho v'damo b'rosho. Now that doesn't sound good. There are five things that if you do them, two things it says about him. One is mitchayev b'nafsho. What does that mean? This is a... This is a capital offense. Mitchayev b'nafsho, this is a capital offense. V'damo b'rosho, and he's responsible for his death. Rashi there explains, damo b'rosho, ne'enash al atzmo, v'chovat damo nidreshet mimenu la'acha mitato. That means you've committed suicide, and then God will prosecute you for murder, because you've killed somebody. So this doesn't sound so good. This is already enough to scare some of you. Yes? Good. So what are these five things? One, ha'ochel shum kaluf, to eat garlic which is peeled, one second, in the middle of a sentence, u'batzel kaluf, an onion which is peeled, u'beitza klufa, and eggs which are peeled, v'hashote mashkin mizugin shavara alein alayla, and to drink a drink which has had water added to it. In the old days, they would keep things for a long time by concentrating them, like either cooking them, other, but they would be concentrated. Then they would add water to it, and once they add water to it, then it becomes usable. So once you add water to it, they're telling you not to leave it overnight. Now the overnight over here is a dangling modifier, which goes to all the things which have been on the list until this point. So it says, therefore, that what is considered to be so dangerous, namely, garlic, onions, eggs, drink, which has been left overnight. V'halan b'beit ha'kfarot. And the fifth one is to spend the night in the cemetery. Now what's interesting over here is that even though there's a list of five, it now continues to six, seven, and eight, which I'll deal with in a second. V'hanotel tzipurnav v'zakan l'rishut harabim. If you cut your fingernails and then throw them into the rishut harabim. Now, I would suspect if I ask you, have any of you ever heard any laws about fingernails, I suspect that we will get a much higher response in terms of a fingernail. Okay, good. V'hamekizdam u'mashemesh mitato. Somebody who goes for bloodletting, you don't do bloodletting much anymore, do you? It's considered to be a wonderful form of medicine. Somebody who does bloodletting and then has marital relations right afterwards. So that's considered to be a very bad combination. Apparently, there's some kind of danger involved in that as well. Now, how many things did the Gemara mention?
Seven.
How do you count seven?
Seven, I count.
Shum, but... Right, so then how does he say five things? Right. Now, if the food is together, does that mean the prohibition is only if you eat all of these three things together? Or is the prohibition each one of them separate? Almost none of the commentaries ask that very simple question, which is, just based on mathematics, but I'll leave that out right now. The Gemara qualifies as it goes on. Ha'ochel shum kaluf, if you eat garlic which has been peeled and left overnight, v'afal gav d'manichi b'salta u'mitzayri v'chatimi. Even though you left it in a salta, what is a salta? It's a sal, a basket. U'mitzayri, what does that mean? Closed, sealed, something like the word tsar. V'chatimi, which means even though it was, the English over here says, deposited in a basket, tied up and sealed, which means packed away. So even though it's dangerous. And here, and this is the important part of this line, we're given the reason why. Ruach ra'a shora aleihim. Nonetheless, what is a ruach ra'a? An evil spirit nonetheless will get to it, even if it's tied up, and even if it's packed up, and even if it's inside. All of this... No, this is not like superstition.
It is superstition.
Well, it's only superstition if it's not true. If they have... One second. It's only superstition if you see no direct correlation. If, on the other hand, they have some kind of inside information that these things are spiritually damaging, at that point it's not superstition. So, v'lo amran, and it's only the case, v'lo amran ela d'lo shayar behen ikaran o klipatan, only if you didn't leave any of its root or of the peel, avol shayar behen ikaran o klipatan leit lanba, then this does not apply. Which means if you have peeled onion and you have the slightest amount of peel still on the onion, or the slightest amount of peel still on the garlic, or you have the root which is still there, so then the Gemara itself says, no, that's not the consideration. It's only if it's 100% peeled. So again, that's the Gemara, no more, no less, that's what the Gemara said. In source number 3, the Aruch Laner, is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. If I'm not mistaken, he was one of the teachers of Rav Shimshon Feuerl Hirsch. He writes, Okli Patan, Afal Gav de Ayir Shehin Klufim, Sarach Loma de Ka'amar Im Niklafu, source 3, Aval HaKlipa Adayin Me'urabahen as like a sakana. He says, no, what is it? It says that you can't peel it, but the peel is still here. What does it mean? He goes, no, this is peeled completely, but what does me'ura mean here? It means it still clings to it, which means you peel the onion, but a drop of the peel is still touching it, because then already it doesn't apply. Which, by the way, if somebody really is concerned about this halakha, you have a very easy way of solving it. You can peel your onion, put them in the fridge, but just leave a little bit of the peel, little drop of the peel still on it, you don't have a problem. Same thing with eggs. By the way, with eggs, it's not so clear. Are we talking about eggs which are raw or eggs which are cooked? Which is a big... And either way, I'll say it again. And if you leave a drop of the peel, then you've solved the problem as far as the Gemara goes. Now, it didn't tell us about it. We don't know right now anything else. We don't know if it's whole. We don't know if it's peeled. We don't know anything else. Now, yeah. So now you know why, but you'll be able to respond to him by the time we finish today. Yeah?
Okay. Can I say something that has absolutely nothing
to do? No. If it has nothing to do, then no.
No,
okay.
Okay. I'm a microbiologist.
Yeah.
And if you ever saw what was in water, if it sat out for a long period of time, I mean, this is from a religious standpoint, but could have it had a basis because they didn't
yes.
understand the scientific?
Yes.
I mean,
right.
I mean, so could they have done kind of a religious Gemara type of but there was a basis in a science that they didn't know yet.
Could be. Look, the temptation to connect this to science, I think, is a strong one. I think it's a good one. There's a lot of logic in that. I'm not...
Right.
But let's look at something more important. Let's look at something more important. Put the thermostat.
The thermostat's over there, and I already put it up from 16 to 22.
So. Okay, ladies, let's continue. So when you see a passage in the Talmud like this, you could do a couple of different things. One thing you could say is, okay, the Talmud reflects spiritual reality, and that's the end of the discussion. The other possibility is to say, hold it, is this particular line in the Gemara one which is accepted in Jewish law? Those are two possibilities right there. What's the responsible thing to say? The second one. Is this Jewish law? Now, how do we know if this is Jewish law? And by the way, it was interesting, not that I'm going to pick on her too much, but she says, a little known halakha, a point of Jewish law. So she understands over here that this is a point of Jewish law. By the way, why is that significant? Is that afterwards when I bother her and I tell her that this is really not a point in Jewish law necessarily, so then if she wants to be matur neder, she may not have to be matur neder at all. If you follow a custom that you think is a law, but it's really only a custom, you don't have to be matur neder. Right? We've discussed this before. Somebody tells you that this particular thing is a law. I gave you an example of this last year. Somebody that I know never kept kosher in his life, became a Baal Tshuva, started keeping 3 hours between meat and milk. Somebody told him, what 3 hours? That's not a bona fide halacha. You have to keep 6 hours. He started keeping 6 hours. He told me about this. I said, that's not true. 3 hours is a bona fide minhag, and therefore, whoever told you you have to keep 6 hours was wrong, and you can go back to 3 hours without even being matur neder, because you got wrong information over here. So, again, this is a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch. If somebody does a minhag because they think it's a halacha and doesn't realize it's a minhag, so then they do not have to be matur neder. If somebody does a minhag and they think it's a minhag, then you have to be matur neder. Last Shabbos, I went away for Shabbos, and it was a place that my students were there, and they brought some guys to play in a band after Shabbos. And some point in the middle of Shabbos, the guy who's in charge comes over to me and says, one of the members of the band just remembered that he really started to keep Shabbos Rabbeinu Tam. And when Shabbos is over, he'll still have Shabbos, so he wants to know what to do. What? Well, he didn't realize that if he has to play after Shabbos by Havdalah, that it may still be Shabbos for him. I think this was a new phenomenon anyway. That's a question I'll deal with on another point. We'll talk about Rabbeinu Tam Bli Neder. For the meantime, let's get back to our onions and garlic.
The expression, mitchayev ben ashov, and the mobile will show,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe, so I'm trying to understand it, because this thing, it seems illogical to say something so terrible. I mean, you didn't kill anyone. Maybe it means that it's dangerous.
Exactly.
And you can harm yourself, right. And you have no one to blame but yourself.
Exactly. Okay. That's what it means. No, it's not you deserve, is that you will be killing yourself by doing this, right? I'd prefer not for now, unless you have to. Go ahead. Three times. With not doing anything else. Let's say Rabbeinu Tam, for example. Let's say 3 times in the last year you kept Shabbos 72 minutes after Shabbos, so you don't have to matur neder. If 3 weeks in a row you keep it that way, deliberately, because, oh, Rabbeinu Tam says it's still Shabbos till 72 minutes after, so then you do have to matur neder afterwards.
You do it not consciously, but you were staying with
God. Again, I said you have to do it because you... Right. I don't know. I have to say the truth. I did a lot of preparation for this class. I didn't really look into the witch angle on it, or for that matter, the vampires and so on. I did collect literally an obscene amount of material, over 60, 70 pages of notes on this topic. No, let's continue. Come on, we're not going to get anywhere. Yes. Yeah. Can we continue, and then we'll get to all kinds of applications. Let's take a look now. Tosfot in source number 4 is talking about something else completely. Tosfot over here is commentary on the Gemara in Yoma, which is dealing about washing hands. Now, after I looked at this, it occurred to me that we probably need to talk about washing hands at some point. How many different kinds of washing hands are there in Judaism? Okay, a lot of different kinds. There's washing hands in the morning when you get up. Yes? There's washing for bread. What else? There's washing after the cemetery, after the bathroom. There's mayim achronim, kohanim. Each one of these washing may be different laws, different reasons, different results, and maybe different amounts of water and different ways of doing them. So, I'm just going to say that for a moment. Tosfot over here is commentary on a Gemara which uses the words mishum shifta, that you have to wash your hands. This is in the morning, and the problem is something called shifta. Now, you don't know what shifta is right now, but if you, those of you who like superstition, which is a word I don't like so much right now, turn to source 12 for a second, and you'll see Rashi explaining what shifta is on the same Gemara. Medicha et yada, washing the hand, lefi sheruach ra'a shere al halechem hal nilkach biyadayim shelo nitlan shacharit v'shem hashed shifta. So if a person touches bread who has not washed their hands, now this is not washing your hands for bread, somebody has not washed their hands when they woke up in the morning. All through the night, they were sleeping, and it's considered that some kind of ruach ra'ah got them in the night. What is the ruach ra'ah that got? We know not, it's not a generic ruach ra'ah. We know the name of this ruach ra'ah. What's the name of this ruach ra'ah?
Shifta.
And what is shifta according to Rashi?
Shade.
A shade. What is a shade? A demon. So Rashi says the name of the demon that breathes upon you, ruach ra'ah, when you sleep is shifta. And therefore, if somebody who has shifta on their hands touches bread, that could be problematic, again, spiritually and maybe even physically. Tosfot over here is dealing with this other type of ruach ra'ah. He's dealing with this type of shifta. Source number 4. And look at 3 lines in the bottom where it's underlined, because I'm completely ignoring that topic, and you'll see why in a second. Uma sha'olam ein nizharin achshav bizeh. And he goes, and that which people today are not concerned about this. Now, what is the this? The this is his topic. He's talking about shifta, and he's talking about washing hands, and in the morning, and bread. She'ein ota ruach ra'a shara be'elu ha-malchiyot, kemo she'ein nisharim ala giloi ve'ala zugot, which are other things that have to do with, for lack of a better word, superstition. So what did Tosfot tell us over here? That where we live, there is no such thing as this type of ruach ra'ah, and at least in this type of ruach ra'ah. He does say this type, he limits it. She'ein ota ruach ra'ah shara, which means Rabbeinu Tam is telling us, now is this based upon his spiritual insight, or is this based upon empirical evidence? That I can't tell you, but what can I tell you? In these, where we live, what he's telling you in Ashkenaz, there is no such thing as this ruach ra'ah. But he tells us another thing. He told us 2 things. What's the first thing that he said? She'ein ho'lam nizharim achshav, that we don't worry about such things. So Rabbeinu Tam, when it comes to at least one type of ruach ra'ah, what does he tell us? This is not our custom, and therefore he tells us this must not be a concern. Otherwise, if no one's doing it, you would have Jews dropping like flies. That's not the case. So he tells us this is not a concern in our land where we live. The Maharshal, the Yamshel Shlomo, of Shlomo Luria, lives a couple hundred years later, but again, Ashkenaz, major Ashkenaz authority, major Ashkenaz posek. Here he's talking, his starting point over here is Mayim Achronim. And as I told you, Bli Nedu, we'll come back to this, and we'll see probably this source again, but what is interesting is the very end of his comments, the next page. The ha'idna, which means by us, ein nizharin bazeh, we are not careful about such things. Lefi she'otan ruchot hanizkarim b'talmud einan mitsuyim b'neinu. Which means, the spirits which they spoke about in those days, they don't exist among us. Which, again, over here we have two very important sources from Ashkenaz. The first is Rabbeinu Tam talking about one particular Ruach Ra. The second source over here is from the Maharshal, who's telling us as a general statement that we are not concerned about such things. One more source I'll bring, which is... I'm not going to guess right now. Again, what's more important to me is the history of this particular custom or halacha, but now we're seeing over here, and we see another thing. We see that, what was the statement of the Maharshal? This was a very broad statement. What did he say? All of the things in the Gemara that deal with Ruach Ra'ah, it is not a concern today. Which means, maybe they were concerned there. Why it's not a concern, we still need to figure out. So let's continue. Source number 8, we're skipping number 7 right now, we'll come back to it. Source number 8 is the Mordechai. The Mordechai is also one of the members of Tosfot, before the Maharshal, closer to the time of Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfot. And he's discussing our particular case. People have asked, why are we not concerned with Ruach Ra'ah, concerning the egg and the onion and so on. He's dealing with our case. As it says in that Gemara Nida, Yofe kataftim, he responds, correct what you've said, what you've written. This, by the way, is in the Haga'ot Mordechai, the notes on the Mordechai. D'dil melo shchiach b'neinu, inami kitvei kodesh alein matzilim, v'shalom ani ma'ir. Now, ani ma'ir. Now, he says two things, and they both need to be explained and qualified. He says, the Dilma Lushrech Beneinu. It seems that this particular Ruach Ra does not exist among us. And then he also says something else, which is very strange. He says, and maybe the Kitvei Kodesh on them are saving them. Now, you have no idea what he's talking about over here. He's also responding specifically to the egg. And the truth is, he's responding to one particular case, which I will explain very briefly right now, but one of the later commentaries will explain it much more. An earlier Ashkenazic source, which is called the Rokeach, he tells us that when kids would first begin to learn Torah, and this is something which they would very often initiate people, sometimes on Shavuos, and we find this written on the laws of Shavuos, they would take some kind of food and they would write a pasuk on it and have the kid eat it and say, now Torah will be ingested by them. For all of you have been told and concerned about writing, let's say, on the birthday cake and things like that, they wrote on an egg a pasuk, and then they would eat the egg. That's what he's referring to over here. So he's saying, how can you possibly, but if it was Shavuos, then they would prepare it before, because the writing would be on the egg itself and not on the peel. So they would write it before. So he says it's obvious from this custom that they would write on the egg the day before. So they write on the day before, then it had to spend that night. So he's really trying to explain that particular custom. So therefore he says, okay, Dilma, maybe that there is no concern about Ruach Ra on the one hand. On the other hand, it could be that the holy writing over here counteracts as an antidote to whatever Ruach Ra. But we see again an early source. I'll tell you a secret. They never stayed up all night in those days. Staying up all night on Shavuos is directly related to the introduction of caffeine. If anybody is interested, I will send you a learned article that will track the caffeine industry, its introduction to different cities, and customs at the same time in those cities, a couple of years later, customs of staying up all night. Never customs of staying up all night before we had caffeine. Is that interesting? So if you email me, I will send you that article.
But Leila
Seder is interesting. That would have been the only time in antiquity that they would have tried to stay up, although the four cups of wine is probably working against you. I'm saying there are people. No, there it even says they would try until sleep got the best of them. But no, nobody stayed up Hoshana Rabbah. Nobody heard of such a thing. Nobody stayed up on Shavuos. Nobody heard of such a thing. These things are relatively relatively late. Okay. So far, I have very selectively brought you sources that really didn't like it so much. So just to be fair, I'll bring you a source that says, oh no, this is a big problem. And that is the one that I skipped, which is the Smak, number 7, the Sefer Mitzvot Hakatan. And the Smak says as follows. Here he's speaking about Sefer Mitzvot, Katan, Mitzvah Kuf Ayin Aleph. The whole section here is on things which are dangerous. Things which are dangerous, and therefore you need to have a ma'akeh, you need to have a gate around your roof, and all kinds of he's talking about danger. Within his discussion of danger, he writes the third line, Uva'arve Psachim, that's the name of the chapter in Psachim, Tana it was taught, Ochlin Umashkin Tachat Hamita. Have you ever heard that one? If you leave, that one you've heard of, right? You're not supposed to leave food under your bed when you sleep. That you've heard of, that you haven't heard of either. Okay, that's another one, but not for today. That Tana, right? Ochlin umashkin tachata mita afilu mechupan bekli barzel. Even if it's in, you know, a steel box, ruach ra'ashur aleim, ruach ra'ashur, we'll get to them. Which is your source. And therefore, there's some people who won't eat chopped up garlic on Shabbos morning because of this reason, because it would have then had to have stayed all night. So over here, in his list of dangerous things, he does the obvious. He's aware of a Gemara that talks about something which is dangerous, and he goes and introduces it. Now, here, there's one thing which is real interesting about the Smak. And that is that as far as I can tell, 12th, 13th. So as far as I can tell, and I say this with hesitation, but as far as I can tell, he is the first book of Halacha that introduces this particular law within a Halachic discussion. And what's more interesting are the people who don't necessarily introduce it, but that I'm going to leave for the moment.
He's referring to food left out all night.
Yes. He didn't say that, but we don't know. Yeah. Right, right. There's one person who got yelled at for this, and this is, it's in the book called Revivot Ephraim, Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt. And as far as we know, he's an elderly man, still is a rabbi in Memphis. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Greenblatt, in one of his books, writes that if you take your onions or your garlic and you put them in tin foil and you put them in your fridge, then there's no problem. Now, by the way, there's two possibilities. One possibility is I'm fundamentally concerned about this law. If I'm concerned about this law, then his argument is unconvincing. Why? Because the Gemara itself said, even if you tie it up and put it in a box and so on. The other possibility is I'm fundamentally not concerned with this law, then I don't need to do that. So if he was trying to solve the first problem, he's really bothered, but he thinks it's a solution, then as far as I'm concerned, he fails, and that's why he was attacked. If he's really not concerned with it and says, but he's really getting to the point that you've been bringing up, that over here we're really talking about health concerns. And if you cover it and you put it in your fridge and there's no such health concern, and therefore he's telling people who are bothered by this law, so cover it up and put it in your fridge and then you're fine, and therefore it's more of a psychological thing because he has a bunch of people who are bothered by it, so then his response makes a lot of sense. I can't believe a man with his knowledge I'm not saying that he wouldn't have believed the problem. He could have believed the problem. That doesn't bother me. But then his solution just doesn't make any sense. It must be that he fundamentally doesn't think it's a problem, but has people who are asking him do think it's a problem, and therefore he gives that as a solution. So I'm saying that was one example, as I said, late 20th century of somebody who did write about it. But we will see some more things which will go in that direction. The breakthrough, and I could point my finger in various places, but if I look in source number 9, this is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. This is the Shulchan Aruch of the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose family name was not Schneerson. Why not? Because his name was Schneer. And his son became Schneer's son. But his name was Schneer Zalman from Liadi. And he writes in his Laws of Chosha Mishpat. Now this is interesting because he has a section there which is called Hilchot Shmirat Guf V'Nefesh. A section of things which are dangerous for your soul. And there he writes, and incidentally, this is one of the few places that he deals with real spiritual things which are not really brought in other halachic sources. But I won't go more into that right now. Sif Zayin. V'lo yochal shum kaluf v'batzal kaluf v'beitza kalufa shavar alem alayla m'pnei ruach ra'ah shara alayim. Afilu hem tzrurim bebeged v'chatumim v'im she'er behem ikaram v'hu hasar shebarosh hashum v'abatzel o ma'at klipatam mutarim. So again, he says, this is a problem. You leave a little bit of the peel or a little bit above the start of the root, then this would be okay. The Aruch HaShulchan brings this down in source number 10. Chamisha Dvarim Osim Otam T'chayv B'Nafsho. The Mishnah Brura does not bring it in his Mishnah Brura. He does bring it in a more obscure book, which is called Lakutei Halachos, and he is concerned with this as well. Now that itself is interesting, because there are some people who will tell you today that anything which is written in the Mishnah Brura, the Mishnah Brura is the bottom line, the Mishnah Brura is the deciding opinion, and so on and so forth. But still, is that the book, the Mishnah Brura, or is that anything the Chafetz Chaim wrote? I can assure you, there are many things the Chafetz Chaim wrote that people don't listen to. In this book, in Likutei Halachos, he also says, which he touches someplace in the Mishnah Brura, he says that men are not allowed to shave with machines. Shavers, he was completely against. And according to what I read in memoirs, he would not give anybody an aliyah in his yeshiva who was clean-shaven. So, and I can assure you that there are many, many people who will tell you, we listen to the Mishnah Brura. I haven't seen anybody come and say, well, he wrote this someplace else, and therefore we follow this. So the Mishnah Brura does mention this as well, which that when in the OU website, it was a Rabbi Cohn, when he writes that the poskim today, the majority of the poskim, say this, well, then again, it depends who you're counting. But that's not bad if you count the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Mishnah Brura in Likutei Halachos. That's pretty good people who we would, under normal considerations, follow. The Magen Avram is also somebody who we would follow under normal considerations, and he's considered to be the primary commentary on the Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim. And in source number 6, he writes as follows. He's talking again about a different thing of danger, and he writes, V'efshar d'bizman hazeh ein sakana kol kach, and it's possible, again, whatever he's speaking of there, he goes that today there's not so much danger. D'chazinan kama devarim muskarim b'gemara, because we've seen a number of things that the Gemara mentions, shehim sakana l'ruach ra'ah, which are dangerous as far as this evil spirit goes, v'shar d'varim, and other things, v'ha'idna einu mazik, and by us we see empirically that they don't cause danger. Why? Dinishtanu hativiyot. Now that's a very interesting phrase. How do you translate that? Dinishtanu hativiyot. Nature has changed. Now you want to call that evolution? Call it evolution. Call it whatever you want. He says the reality has changed and these things are not a concern. Vigam hakol lefi teva ha'artzot. And he goes also things dealing with food and health depend on where you live. That's a very interesting comment because there are a number of diets today which are very, very concerned about eating local produce and saying, if this thing is grown locally, that is what you need if you live in that particular climate. But if you eat things from a different climate, that can be something which is dangerous to you. So the Magen Avraham over here seems to absolutely understand this, and therefore... 17th. He seems to absolutely understand this, and he's saying, listen, as far as we know, there's a number of things the Gemara speaks about as far as being danger, empirical evidence that we have, this is not the case, and therefore we're not concerned about it. Now, as far as I can tell, that's a pretty good statement, which means he's continuing along the predominant position of Chachmei Ashkenaz, which we already saw hinted at in Tosfot, in the Mordechai, we saw in the Marshal, and they're all telling us that this is not really a concern. Source number 11, Yad Meir. Nira Ladina, and this tshuva is discussing our case. So I saved you the whole tshuva just to get to his bottom line. Nira Ladina Bevadai Hada'in is Harin Achshav. And it seems to me that certainly the fact that we're not concerned about it. Now, he lived a couple hundred years ago. What does this tell you in this line? That nobody's concerned about this. And by the way, where else did we see that nobody's concerned about this? We saw this in the Magen Avraham. We saw this in the Marshal. So therefore, what does this tell us? That the minhag for maybe the last 1,000 years in Ashkenaz was not to worry about this. And therefore, if I would have asked your grandmothers what their grandmothers know about this, you know what they would have told me? The same thing that you told me. Unless somebody goes and finds something written someplace and tells you, oh, listen, it says this in the Gemara that it's so dangerous. But nobody followed this throughout the centuries. Yeah. Right.
Didn't we see here
at the end of number 6, Magen Avraham, doesn't that mean it's called Kacha, Bach, Hashem, Rambam, and the Rambam also concur? What he says over here is, V'ayin b'yoradeya, simen shin tet zayin, Ve'evin Ezer Kufnun Vav, v'kachos of Abach b'shem HaRambam. We'll see a little bit more as well. We'll get to the Rambam in a moment. Nir Ladina, in source number 11, Bivadai ha de'ein nizharin achshav b'shum kalufu b'tzal kalufu b'tzal kalufim, hu bivadai mishum de'ein otar ruach hara matsui ata klal. It doesn't exist at all. Da harei rishon l'rishonim rabbeinu tam v'siyato. The leader of the Rishonim, the first among the Rishonim, that's a very interesting phrase, and he's right. Probably the most influential posek of the Middle Ages was Rabbeinu Tam, much more than Rashi ever was. Rashi was a commentary. Rashi was an important commentary. Rashi, as a posek, or somebody writing Shelot and Tshuvot, was not as predominant as Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam was the definitive Gadol Hador and influenced the next couple of generations in a very profound way. And he says, take a look, Rabbeinu Tam and all those influenced by Rabbeinu Tam write conclusively, Hochichu mizeh. They brought proof to Einan Nizarim Litain Pat Latinok Bali Hadachat Yadayim. We don't worry about giving bread to a kid without first washing his hands because when he woke up in the morning. We may want to teach the kid in the morning, it's good to wash your hands, but none of you ever heard that I have to wash my kid's hand before I give him bread. He says, we're not worried about this. That this problem of shifta doesn't exist. And he says, the fact is that nobody's concerned about this, and therefore this is not the minhug. This is not what we're concerned about. Therefore, it works out well. And therefore, it makes sense that this was left out. Kol haposkin, all of the poskim left out this law. And he says, therefore, and what Jews do as their custom is something that we should have a little bit of faith in. And he says, right. Now, he said all the poskim left it out. Who is he referring to? Yeah, one second. Shuli? No, he's talking about the food. He's talking about the food, and he used the other thing as a proof. His topic is the onions and the garlic and the eggs. He then went to that other source as an indication where he sees that Rabbeinu Tam just was not concerned about this whatsoever. So he uses that as his proof for this law as well. So when he says that the poskim left it out, which poskim are he referring to? So remember I told you that I went and I found the smock? So what does that tell you? That the smock says it's not okay. But who doesn't speak about it? Who doesn't, is that too many negatives? Who does not prohibit this thing? So you can, now you just start naming names right now. No, who doesn't mention it? No. Out of people that you haven't heard so far today, who doesn't mention it?
The Rambam,
the Rif, the Rush, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, which means all of the people that we normally look at as our basic halachic authorities, all of them left out this law. So now, when you have, and I'm going to say again, a law. If there is a law that the Rambam and the Rif and the Rush and the Tor and the Beis Yosef and the Mechaber and the Ramah, all of them left out this law, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that that's a law in Judaism. Point taken? I don't know that much about him. What I did is that I saw him being quoted by a number of the later authorities, so that I went back and I found him. I don't have that much biographical information on him, but I did find this once again on that website, the HebrewBooks.org, so you can look up the Yad Meir. Source 13 I found particularly interesting. Yad Chanoch. Here you can see, I did give you your biographical information. Rabbi Chanoch Henech ben Rav Yosef David Teitelbaum was born in 1884 in Galicia, died in Satmar in 1943. And what law is he addressing? Bidin Beitzim Klufim Shavar Leim Halayla. Bezrat Hashem Nidrach Sasov. Ever hear of the Sasov Rebbe? Yes, in England, London. So I believe that he's within that dynasty of Sasov. He signs his name at the very end over there. Chanoch Henech ben Harav Ha'eloki Rav Yosef David Misasov. So it sounds to me that he's a son of the Sasov Rebbe at that time. Now he has a number of different considerations, but let's read the first paragraph on Ta, because this is real good. Binei amarat litmoa, madua hishmit maran maharein Rav Yosef Karozal, bishulchano ha-tahor, Simon Kuftet Zayin. Now, Rav Yosef Karo in Simon Kuftet Zayin mentions a number of things that are dangerous. What does he leave out? He leaves out this. So the question that he's dealing with is, well, why did he leave this out? Hamilsa haniskarim beperek yad sham. Why did he leave out this thing about eggs and about garlic and about onions? Da, you should know, da. Sheher eini yididi amiti harav agon Rabbi Mordechai Aryeh mipad kamin, pointed out to me, his friend pointed out, shemivuar lehed yibam Mordechai, he showed him that Mordechai that we saw earlier, shekatov da'ashav ein nizrim bebeitzak lufashav harlai, lemishum sheyitachen sheruach harazel lo shkeich beneinu, ad kan lashono, va'ani omer, shekol hani milta disakanta. He goes, and I say, anything which is an issue which the Gemara tells us is a question of danger. Kol hani milta de sakanta, which means you called this in the very beginning superstition. Now, what I really haven't touched today is what happens when the Gemara tells you something is good for you or bad for you. There's two possibilities. One is they have a tradition, and the other possibility is they're working off of current medical knowledge or understanding. Okay, those are two possibilities. If Rav Shimon Yochai gets up and says this, we don't know where he heard this from. Did he hear this from Rabbi Akiva, who was his teacher, right? Or did he hear this from his doctor, who may have read the latest medical journal, and he thought that this was a consideration? So there are those, and this is a very controversial point. The Rambam's son already, Rav Avram ben Rambam, quotes his father and says, anything in the Gemara which is based upon medical knowledge is irrelevant, because they were based upon medical knowledge of their day, and we follow medical knowledge of our day. Anything which they say in the Gemara based upon tradition, that you need to be concerned about. Now, of course, what's the problem going to be? We don't always know which is which. But I'm saying that point of Rav Ben Rambam is a very important point. Over here, he says, this Rabbi Teitelbaum says, anything which is said in the Gemara, which is because of Ruach Ra'ah, v'hishmitom harifra harambam, and was left out of the Rif and the Rambam, hayne mishum shada'atan dat kodesh, shachshav nishnanu ha'tva'im, v'ein v'dum ela sakana. He says, if the Gemara says something is dangerous, and the Rif and the Rambam left it out, what do you now know? That the Rif and the Rambam were not concerned about this particular thing. V'lo kimachaber echad, and not like this particular author, shekibetz kol eila l'sefer miyuchad, who went and collected all of these things that are dangerous and put it in a book, v'hid pisam, and he published the book, l'hazhir et ha'amon, she'enu nizharim behem, to warn people about things that they were never really bothered with. By the way, I have such a book right over here, which is called the book Shmirat Haguf V'Hanefesh, to be concerned, all kinds of things concerning your body and your soul. I actually have a very nice hakdasha from the author, who is somebody that I am friendly with, but I can assure you that this person, his name is Rabbi Lerner, that in his soul, he loves finding things that nobody else has ever heard of and telling you that you need to be concerned about this. He is not completely irresponsible. And again, I want to be careful. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. For example, in this discussion about garlic and about eggs and onions, he mentions that some sources also say radishes. And he says there's no source for such a thing, and whoever said that was wrong. So he says you don't have to be worried about radishes. But if something is written in the Gemara, as far as he's concerned, the Gemara speaks truth, and therefore this is something that you need to be concerned about. I can assure you that a book like this, which is actually two volumes, this is only half of it, this gets into all kinds of homes, and people read this and say, oh, this is going to be a problem. His conclusion by over here, he has all of his footnotes in the bottom, but his conclusion on the top is lo yochel shum kaluf o batzal kaluf o beitza klufa she'avar aleim alaylim neshuruch ra shura aleim. And he says you shouldn't. And then he goes into various. And then he qualifies afterwards, and he says yesh mi sha'oma delo nemar isrze elodafka b'shum batzal v'lo b'beitza. Some people leave eggs off the list, which is a whole thing I didn't get into. Yesh nogin lakpid gam bitznon kaluf. Some people have a custom of radish as well. Now, he in the footnote admits that there's no source for this, so he's more careful here. The other, he said, the words that he used was lo yochal, you shouldn't eat this. And over here he says, some people are careful about this. Again, my personal way of writing this would have been very, very different. I would have pointed out on the top that there are those, and apparently they're mistaken. He has a hard time saying that on top. Yeshom de in sakana el bebeitzat sluya o mevushelet o beitzat chaya, but if it's raw, then it's not a problem. Ulam yesh chokim v'om de adura b'kolak padahu bebeitzat chaya v'lo mevushelet, which gets you coming and going. Yesh katru de in sakana kishabeitzim o labetzalim uravim imachal acher. Some say that once it's mixed with something else, it's not a problem. Yeshom de in pedar b'zerak kishochlim kamutshahu aval acher kvisha b'chometz. It's only when it's raw, but if it was put in vinegar or salt water, then it's not a problem. And he goes on and on over here. But as again, I'm telling you, he has a whole book like this. So am I going to be surprised? What? I talked to him last week. I told you that. I talked to him last week, and what he does is that he collects all the people that say that this is a problem. But let's again now continue with the Yad Chanoch. Yad Chanoch said, I don't like that people are writing books like this, because if the Rambam, again, I'll say it again, because the Rambam and the Rif, and I'll go further than he goes, not just the Rambam and the Rif, the Rambam and the Rif left it out. But all the Balei Tosfot told, those are your Sfardim, by the way, the Rambam and the Rif left it out. They're also, all the Balei Tosfot, again, except for the Smak, they all said that this is not a problem. The Smak is really the one voice we hear out of all of the Rishonim who tells that this is a problem. There is some intrigue with a passage in the Yerushalmi. A lot of the posts can bring this Yerushalmi. I had a hard time tracking it down and a harder time understanding it. Apparently the Yerushalmi discusses this, but it doesn't discuss it in terms of Ruach Ra'ah, but the Yerushalmi's approach seems to be in terms of health concerns. And therefore, it seems to be the Rishami doesn't consider the Ruach Ra'ah argument whatsoever. So again, that's what I think will emerge from the Rishami, but it was not as clear as I would like it to be. Do I need to read to you his conclusion? Again, the whole thing is interesting, but I got to you the most important thing. He does, in the next paragraph, explain that Rokeach that I told you about eating the egg and writing the words on it. We won't read that again. We won't go into that again. He quotes the Smak in the next paragraph. And look at the very last paragraph. Af lefima shebiarti b'shem Mordechai da'ashav ein b'zeh sakana im kein ein ra'aya di tachin shekein data tosfot, that seems to be tosfot, siyumo de piska de nefilafi in daiti midi hashmid zeh harif ha-rambam v'gam atur v'shulchan aruch l'viyuzeh nir desavar k'divrei ha-mordechai v'yochlu, and so on, go eat and have a good time, which is basically his conclusion over here. And again, no concern whatsoever for this law. And his logic is just so strong. His logic is so strong. A law which is not written in any primary Jewish source is not a Jewish law. Just because somebody may go collect it in a book of things which are spiritually to be concerned with, fine. If somebody wants to be concerned with it, I mean, more power to them. But I would be very careful about actually calling this a halacha. If you look at the Chelkot Yaakov, 20th century, same kind of conclusion. Source number 14 at the very end, Vani Matzati Bagot Mordechai, he quotes the same Mordechai, and he says, therefore, I'm not bothered with this. If you look in... No, they don't talk about all five. They don't talk about all of them. They only talk about those. Because some of the other things are mentioned in sources. The fingernails are mentioned other places. That's why I only wanted to talk about those three. The Tzitz Eliezer has the longest discussion on it, Kiderko Bekodesh. He gives all the various qualifications. He also is the one who quoted the Ad Meir, but you already saw that inside. And even those that are concerned about it, he gives all the reasons to be lenient. Even Rav Vosner, who is generally more of a Hasidic type of posek, again, Rav Vosner is a very elderly man, he's the posek of Bnei Brak. So if you want to know what goes in Bnei Brak, and this is the last source in source 18, you know what, before I read Rav Vosner, I'll just read the conclusion of the Tzitz Eliezer in page 6, Zion, over there, last paragraph, Ha'ola mikol ha'amor, what emerges out of everything that I've written till now, d'me'ikaroshel devar yesh makom latir b'kol gavna, that the truth is that you can allow this in every single case, v'hanohu kein ein mezichichin oto, u'magam kishiyaseh gam hadacha. He also says, hold it a second, if there's Ruach Ra, he quotes somebody for this, Ruach Ra goes on your hands when you sleep. So what do you do in the morning when you wake up? You wash your hands. So he says, okay, so wash it, and you'll get rid of the Ruach Ra. Which, by the way, is also goes back to this thing of possibly some kind of medical concern. But again, this sounds to me like he's just trying to say, okay, you're worried about the Ruach Ra, so you can solve the Ruach Ra. And certainly if you left a little of the shells, the peels on it. Certainly if it was mixed with something else, you put a drop of salt with them, or you put a drop of vinegar on. In all those cases, meaning basically what he's saying is, I think it's mutter. You're bothered by it, so here are all kinds of ways you can deal with it. You're dealing with somebody who's bothered by it, put a drop of salt, it's no longer the same halacha. Put a drop of vinegar, it's no longer the same halacha. Leave the peel on it a little bit, it's no longer the same halacha. So he's saying, if you're bothered by it, it's something which you can deal with, but he says, I'm not really bothered by it, which also appreciate. Excuse me? Right.
So we can't say there's no source.
No, one second. Not every opinion in the Talmud Bavli the law is like. As a matter of fact, I would say in the majority of the opinions of the Talmud Bavli, we end up rejecting. Right? How often do you have Beit Shammai says this and Beit Hillel says this? Beit Shammai is also in the Talmud Bavli. So the fact it's written in the Talmud Bavli, you're right. That's a good argument. But the fact that in their halachic discussions, almost none of the later authorities saw reason to bring that is what's intriguing. Last source, 18, Rav Vosner, he writes, Beinyan shum kaluf batzal kaluf batzal klufa bishas nida, writes so on to Ruach Ra umetchei benafsho. V'hagon Rav Shneur Zalman, that's the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Shulchan Harav, miviu behilchot shmirat hanefesh, v'Shulchan Aruch hishmito. So here he has a problem. The Shulchan Aruch leaves it out. The Shulchan Aruch Harav puts it in. V'katavti b'shev levi chiv l'gimel de'ikar atam mishum da sakana shel bitzalim v'shum hu bevade sakana skulit lo tiv'it. He goes, we're certainly dealing with something which is magical, and you're not dealing with something over here which is based upon physical laws. And he accepts that toast. He goes, no, we're not worried by Ruach Ra. So I'm saying, even Rav Vosner, the posek of Bnei Brak, isn't concerned about this. So now, what becomes so interesting is that when somebody says, well, most poskim are concerned by this, that may or may not be true, but that may also depend which century you lived in. If you lived in anything between the 10th and the 19th century, that would not be a true statement. If you lived between the If you lived between the 10th and the 19th century, the overwhelming majority of poskim were not concerned about this. We do find, suddenly, in the 19th century, people waking up. As far as I can tell, the first one who jars them is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. That's not really true. There was one earlier source, there was one earlier commentary on the Shulchan Aruch himself in that place in Yeridei that speaks about danger, that in a comment he says, oh, but the Gemara also says this is dangerous. So one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch mentions it. Then the Shulchan Aruch HaRav rides on that wave, and then we find afterwards the Aruch HaShulchan, we find the Mishneh Berurah in his other book, Likutei Halachos, being concerned about it, and then we find in the 20th century, or 19th and 20th century, a lot of the poskim, when they're asked about it, they say, yeah, okay, and I don't want to even sound flippant, so the Mishneh, the Chafetz Chaim was bothered by it, okay, so the Aruch HaShulchan was bothered by it, but the Rambam wasn't bothered by it, the Magen Avraham wasn't bothered by it, Tosfot specifically tells us we're not bothered by it. So he goes, if that's the case, the Mordechai, as we saw, that wasn't bothered by it. He goes, if that's the case, this is not a halacha that we need to be bothered with. Somebody is looking to search for a new minhag that you want to adopt into your life. So fine, here's a very nice minhag. It's based on the Gemara. There are worse things you can do in this world than to do something which is based upon the Gemara. But now, if you're going to call me up and ask me a shaila, you're going to ask me halacha, and say, Rabbi, I left an onion overnight, and my neighbor, son-in-law, kolo member, whoever you want, said that I can't eat it because it's left overnight. What should I do now? Should I throw it away? So what will I answer? I would say if your kolo student is watching you, then say, okay, I was told to psak that if you wash it, that it's not a problem. Okay? Because that will make him happy. So because you can wash it. So that's what the tzitzis says. Okay, you washed it. Now everything is okay. But if you ask me beforehand, is this a law that you need to be concerned with? No, you don't have to be concerned with. Why? Why don't you have to be concerned with it?
But the Rambam wasn't concerned. The Rif
wasn't. And more importantly, the Rambam, the Rif, the Rush, the Tor, the Beis Yosef, the Rama, Magen Avraham, all were concerned with it. But more importantly, your mothers and your grandmothers weren't concerned about it, and therefore it's not your minhag. And if it's not your minhag, you could smile and appreciate why other people keep it because it's written in the Gemara, but you don't have to worry about it. Another time.
Is this the